Welcome to VFN TV and the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
I don't know if you ever watched, you know, I've seen some remodeling shows, and I mean, it's to me, it's just, it's like, you know, you're going to be over budget.
Exactly.
You know, something's going to go wrong, and I don't want to live through that. I don't want to watch a disaster.
Right.
You know, I don't want to go through that. You know, life's a lot, has those issues already. And so you watch these guys that go in, they say, you know, it's going to take us $5,000 in 2 days to do this thing. Before you know it, they're fighting with each other. They found out that the wiring has to be redone. They're like $20 billion over a project. They're making payments. And I was like, this is a show? This is stressful.
And, of course, no matter how nice your house is already, right, you're always thinking, wow, we really could do something with that. It's like, yeah, oh, my goodness, stop it. Stop. We're blessed. Yeah. Thank you. No, we don't need to do anything.
Yeah, that's another thing. That is the new.
We don't need to do anything. We're blessed.
That's the new probably lust channel for a lot of people watching. You know, they want more in their houses. But this is one particular program that – I really like this husband and wife and their family. Just seemed to be a real sweet family. But I didn't know this till I heard her testimony. Joanne Gaines. Their show is called Fixer Upper, mm-hmm, and they go to nice neighborhoods that have a rundown house, mm-hmm, in that neighborhood, and it's at the end of itself, and they just fix it up, you know, like God does us.
Yeah. Right?
And
I'm still being worked on.
It's pretty cool. They got a great talents, you know, and that type of thing. But it's good to see us think again, because, you know, Americans are always like, I want something new.
Right.
And they kind of take you back to the older things and how to
restore and stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, I knew something was different about them, but I want you to listen to her testimony. She's giving her testimony. Joanne Gaines is right here, and it'll just bless your heart when you hear this, because, you know, this may be you. You know, you may have had something in your life and God's asking you to put it down for a while. You're thinking, I'll never see this again. Well, she shares about that experience, and she has a business today called Magnolia, but she set that thing down just like God asked her to, and she focused on her family, and it's just an amazing testimony how God just blessed her and how she just honors God. As a matter of fact, take a look.
I remember as a little girl, my mom was Korean and my father was Caucasian, and I never knew there was anything different about myself until I started going to school. And I'll never forget an experience I had with a school lunchroom. You know, I remember standing there and seeing the sea of people. It felt like all eyes were on me. And I was thinking, you know, who's going to be my friend? Who am I going to sit with? I started walking through that lunchroom, and then I remember darting straight out. And I found a bathroom, locked myself in a stall. But in those moments is when I really believe that that's where the lie was sown, that who I was wasn't good enough. You know, as we all do, I grew up and I grew out of the insecurities, had great friends, great childhood. And I remember in those times, I heard him specifically say, you know, Joanna, I have a calling for you. You're going to have a platform one day. And I remember thinking, what does that even mean? And I remember hearing God say, Joanna, there's going to come a time where I'm going to say for you to go, and I'm going to need you to step out and go. After graduating college, you know, a couple years later, I end up meeting this handsome, rugged cowboy who was hilarious, Chip Gaines. And we got married, and he knew that I had this whole thing of businesses that I wanted to start, but he also knew I was never going to just take the risk and start them. I just dreamed about them. And he really encouraged me to step out and make one of those dreams happen. And we opened Magnolia Market together, and I loved it. You know, but at that time, I was also pregnant with my second child, and I really felt like God was saying, hey, I want you home. I want you raising these babies at home at this age. And I remember the last day, you know, we're closing the shop down and I'm crying because, again, I feel like it's the end of a dream. And I hear God say very clearly, he said, Joanna, if you trust me with your dreams, I'm going to take Magnolia further than you could have ever dreamed. So just trust me. And I remember hearing that and feeling completely peaceful about it. And I walked away. Well, a couple years ago, we get this call from a production company, and they ask us to film a quick video of our family and what we do as a business, and that turned into the show that we have now. You know, Chip and I laugh. We look back and we just go, how did this all happen? And I remember last year in January, Chip and I took a trip to Arizona, and we were driving around and we found this really beautiful garden, and Chip said, I'm going to drop you off here. I'm going to give you about an hour, and I want you to kind of reflect on the year before and then just let God speak to you about what this next year is going to look like. And he dropped me off, and I'm sitting under this tree, and I felt like God said, Joe, it's time. And I was like, time for what? And he said, it's time to reopen your store. And I said, I don't think I can do that. And just cool and calm, no, it's time. May of last year, we reopened the shop on Bosque, the little shop on Bosque. And now I look back and I go, God, your promise that you spoke years ago, I'm now seeing. I trusted you with my dream, and you've taken it far beyond what I could have ever dreamed or imagined. You know, I can look back now in the pattern of my life and really believe God has a purpose for me, but he also has a purpose for you. And on the other side of that is the enemy, where he knows where to hit. He knows to hit below the belt. He's going to have that fear be, if you fail, and what if you fail in front of all these people? What if you fail and don't find someone in that lunchroom? What if your business fails? Whether it's you're staying home with your children and you're raising beautiful babies, or you're the CEO of a multi-million dollar company, let God speak into your life. Let his father heart come and say, this is what I have for you. And I think that's the key, not believing the lies, fixing our eyes on Jesus and walking in that truth.
That is so awesome.
That's awesome.
That is totally, totally awesome. And so it's a good little show. And, you know, when she comes at the very end of the show, she brings her kids in and they help her finish the house up and do the things like that.
It's awesome. I can really appreciate that.
Yes. 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 I can definitely appreciate that too.
We'll be right back.
I love to see crowds burn, but I know I can shape history if I can find just one. Anybody can burn in a crowd. I want to find someone that'll burn by themselves.
Did you know President Herbert Hoover and President Richard Nixon were friends? As in friends or Quakers, part of a long list among influencers in America.
Quakers formed around the teachings of George Fox, a 17th century leader who emphasized a personal experience with God. His sermons and writings quoted the Bible frequently, bringing hope for religious freedom despite government harassment, even imprisonments.
By the end of the century, there were 100,000 Quakers, among them William Penn, who used his influence to establish the British province of Pennsylvania as a sanctuary for religious freedom.
The Toleration Act in 1689 granted freedom to Quakers, and it became the denomination today known as Friends, taken from Jesus' words in John 15:14. You are my friends if you do what I command.
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Steve, new Gallup poll. Recent Gallup poll says that half of the United States population, it continues to say that the government is an immediate threat. 50%, 49, 50% believe that the U.S. government, according to Gallup poll, is an immediate threat. Why should this be when the government should be of and by and, you know, for the people? It's a representative government. listen, we don't want to get to a point where it, that number 75%, 60%. And the government's not supposed to be our enemy. It's supposed to be our friends. It's supposed to be our neighbors. It's supposed to be the people in our community who we, through a voting process, select to go to Washington, D.C. or our State Department, State Capitol, and be our elected representatives to represent us, because we're all working, but they can represent us and report back to us in regards to the things that they are wanting to implement, laws, things that we as citizens are even suggesting that they actually put into law. And so this shouldn't be this confrontational thing, but sad to say, in our country, it's very, very divided right now. And we want to be able to talk about, because this is one of the things we talk about on, in our program, is the original intent of our nation. And it's so important that we understand that we are a country of laws.
Right.
And that the Constitution must be protected. It must be protected because it helps every single individual that comes here to the United States and becomes a citizen. We want you to see, this was done by the Bill of Rights Institute. Phenomenal. We're going to make sure that this is actually related for you on the torch. They have so many ways of young people can get educated and learn about the Constitution. It's really fascinating. But they put this video together that really outlines the difference between a democracy and the republic. Watch this.
America, the world's greatest democracy.
And if we say we believe in democracy,
the power of our democracy.
American democracy.
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 This is a democracy.
Usual rhetoric and language of our public officials and within the media is the language of democracy.
The constitutional principle of republican government means that the people select representatives to make and carry out laws.
Are the American people fit to govern themselves, to rule themselves, to control themselves?
For the British colonists living in North America in the 18th century, republican government was the only theoretical alternative form to monarchy. When the colonies separated from England, the American people would begin an experiment in self-government. What form would that government take?
Dr. Franklin, you've just come from the Constitutional Convention. What have we got? A republic or a monarchy?
Though many refer to the United States as a democracy, this is not accurate. The United States is not a democracy, but rather a constitutional republic.
Constitutional republic would be a republic that bounded government, that limited government. And for the American people of the revolutionary period, a constitutional government would have been a government that would have respected the rights of the people and afforded certain protections for those rights. And we need to link those two things. Otherwise, it becomes then too easy to fault the system for not being purely democratic. Well, it wasn't intended to be a pure democracy.
It's impossible to know everything the founders believed and wanted, and they didn't all feel the exact same way about most issues. But they all wanted to establish a system that would best protect liberty, and they saw that democracy was just as dangerous to liberty as monarchy. The majority could not be trusted with people's rights any more than a monarchy could be. Direct democracy had been tried through history, and it repeatedly failed. Arguing against the direct election of the president by the people at the Constitutional Convention, Elbridge Gerry said, "The evils we experience flow from the excess of democracy. The people do not want virtue, but are the dupes of pretended patriots." Writing in the Federalist Papers, James Madison observed in 1787, "Pure democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths." Republican government was one way the founders worked to correct the problems that would come with a majority rule system. Most had concluded that a republican government required a small territory, as well as a virtuous citizenry in order to work. While Madison knew that a virtuous citizenry was needed, he turned the small territory idea on its head. A large or extended republic, he asserted, would better protect liberty. The people, he said, would naturally divide themselves into groups, which he called factions. Factions would have different interests, different beliefs, and different desires. These many different factions over a large extended republic would prevent a majority of citizens coming together to oppress a minority. A further check on the power of the majority would be the election of representatives. Rather than directly governing, the people would vote for people to represent their interests. Madison wrote in Federalist 39, "We may define a republic to be a government which derives all of its powers, directly or indirectly, from the great body of the people, and is administered by persons holding their offices during pleasure for a limited period or during good behavior." So, if the U.S. is not a democracy, why do we often hear the phrase majority rule? Does the majority always rule? Should it?
It's okay. It's a democracy. I don't need, or I didn't need, 100% to prevail. I only needed 50% plus one.
Are there some things a majority cannot do, even if everyone in that majority wants the same thing? How would you know what those things are? We know, as Abraham Lincoln said in the Gettysburg Address, that the United States of America has a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And we also know that John Adams warned in 1814, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide." Some have compared a democracy to two wolves and a sheep voting on what to eat for dinner. Democracy alone is not enough to protect everyone's rights. Something more is needed. A study of the Constitution reveals the founders heeded this warning and took many measures, including republican government, to ensure the blessings of liberty for posterity.
We'll be right back.
There's been an overemphasis on faith to the point that we sort of sometimes throw our chest out. Faith in God's mercy just requires just a teeny, teeny bit of faith. But it's not your faith, it's His mercy that gets it done. This ought to take a load off your shoulders. If you come up against something that's overwhelming, if you come up against something that's threatening, don't necessarily worry about your faith, worry about His mercy. His mercy endures forever. There's nothing inherent in us that makes us good enough to receive the mercy of God. It is a gift of God. His mercy is on you right now while I'm speaking. There's somebody at home right now, the Holy Spirit is showing me that something has happened to you, and it looks like your life is going to be a lot more difficult in the oncoming days, and you have the breath knocked out of you. But the Lord sent me here this morning to tell you it's not going to get more complicated. It's going to get better. Woo! Hey!
Can a public school exclude Christian groups from using their facilities? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulow.
Yeah, I would like to know if facilities form at a public school can state that religious activities or religious organizations are prohibited from using facilities.
Absolutely not. We've litigated that case now three times at the Supreme Court of the United States. The first time we won it in an 8-1 decision. The second time the case was unanimous. Even the third time, which was an elementary school level case, we won 6-3 overwhelmingly. So the answer is no. There cannot be a religious exclusion from access to a generally available public facility. If they allow community groups to utilize these facilities, they cannot deny a Christian group from utilizing those facilities because their message is one that has religious connotation, religious thought, or religious belief.
Join the American Center for Law and Justice in defending our religious liberties. Find out more at aclj.org. That's aclj.org.
This is so important. This is the wisdom behind an electoral college when we vote. If our president was elected based upon majority, then that means that all would happen is that half the population could move to a few states, or the states that had the largest population, the presidential candidates will only have to go to those few states, win their approval, and then 3 or 4, 6, 7 states could basically decide what would happen to the entire country. But the wisdom of the Electoral College means that you have to go to every single state. You have to be able to get the consensus, the whole picture in order to be able to be elected. Listen, there's so much to this, and we want to be able to make sure that we understand this, that we educate ourselves, that we become informed. There's a lot of things that are being passed today with good intentions, but good intentions are not enough. We need to know what is the rule of law, and we need to make sure that all of our rights are protected, and we need to make sure that process and due diligence is actually done, and we don't sign laws and implement things that are against the Constitution. We begin to erode and cut up the Constitution. It's not long before we'll have tyranny.
Right.
And, you know, who would have thought that we would be discussing this, you know, in 2016, but we are, and it's real. And more and more and more we realize, you know, this experiment of America is pretty young. Think about it. It's pretty young. We want to make sure that it lasts. But before we do want to talk about civil liberties in a connect the dots moment. And I want you to make sure that you actually watch this because Greg does a great job setting it up as he introduces Prager University. And why are we losing our civil liberties? Watch this.
We have to pay attention. We have to become alert about what's going on. The question is, and Prager does a real good job of explaining this, Prager University, you know, why are we losing our liberties? As a matter of fact, take a look now.
How did the framers of the Constitution of the United States seek to preserve liberty and prevent tyranny? Pretty basic question. Here's the answer I usually get from my students. Well, Professor, to protect the individual and minorities against the tyranny of the majority, they added the Bill of Rights, and they gave the power to enforce those rights to the Supreme Court. Are my students correct? The editorial boards of the New York Times or the Washington Post and many members of the U.S. Congress would say yes. Unfortunately, the answer is wrong. I say unfortunately because it reflects a common misunderstanding of the Constitution. And that misunderstanding has led to a serious erosion of our freedom. Let me explain. Both the Bill of Rights and judicial review, the idea that the courts can decide if a law is constitutional or not, were hotly debated items when the Constitution was being drafted in 1789. The Federalists, the group led by Alexander Hamilton that wanted a national constitution, opposed including a Bill of Rights. They feared it would actually undermine what the Federalists regarded as the main protections against tyranny in the document, the limited nature of the national government itself. The Constitution did not envision a national government of general jurisdiction, meaning a government that could do whatever it wanted, but rather a government of enumerated and delegated powers, a government that had authority over only specific areas of American life. All other powers were to be beyond the scope of the national government and reserved to the states or to the American people themselves. That's why when political necessity forced the Federalists to yield to demands for a Bill of Rights, they took care to add two important amendments, the 9th and 10th. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. These amendments reinforce the idea that the national government couldn't just assume powers it had not been specifically granted by the Constitution. Unfortunately, these amendments have not stymied the expansion of the national authority. The power grab the Federalists feared, the national government taking more and more control over more and more areas of American life, took place. Not immediately, but over time, and especially beginning in the second half of the 20th century. That same time frame has seen a similar concentration of power in the judiciary, especially in the Supreme Court, so that now most Americans think of the Supreme Court as the ultimate arbiter of almost every social and political dispute. The founders never envisioned the court in this role. How has the court fared in playing it? Well, there have been moments of glory, to be sure, such as in the racial desegregation case of Brown against the Board of Education in the 1950s. But it has also handed down decision after decision from Dred Scott against Sanford in the 1850s, which facilitated the expansion of slavery, to Roe against Wade in the 1970s, which legalized abortion throughout the United States, in which the justices have plainly overstepped the bounds of their authority by creating law from the bench, thereby further expanding their own power and that of the national government. Moreover, the Supreme Court has done little to stop the executive and legislative branches of the national government from unconstitutionally overreaching. Recently, the court found a way, by a bare majority, to uphold an obvious case of constitutional overreach by the national government, the imposition of a law, or individual mandate as it is known, requiring every citizen to purchase health insurance coverage as part of President Obama's signature Affordable Care Act. The government defended this mandate as a legitimate exercise of its expressly delegated power to regulate commerce among the states. The trouble is that the mandate does not regulate commerce at all. Rather, it forces people into commerce on pain of a financial penalty. But why did the issue get to the courts at all? Congress and the president should have recognized and honored the fact that the Constitution simply does not empower the national government to impose a mandate on the people to purchase products, whether health insurance or anything else. We've drifted a long way from the original vision of the founders. The further we've drifted, the more powerful the national government has grown, and the less free Americans have become. Freedom can be taken away, but it can also be given away out of sheer ignorance. If we Americans, we the people, want to get some of that freedom back, we need to read America's founding documents. All the freedom we ever wanted is there. I'm Robert George, professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University for Prager University.
So you think about this. I mean, can you imagine if all of a sudden we get an order out of Washington, D.C. that you have to, everybody has to get into this multi-level marketing business, Amway. Think about it, you know. They're telling us we have to get involved, and if we don't get involved, we're going to get penalized. The government is just shifting and totally shifting its role and its original intent. You know, one thing that we're fixing to go to a break, but one thing we're going to do with VFN, with our VFN Kingdom Business Partners, is focusing on the government mountain, where groups get together, small groups get together, you know, small is the new big, and have a relationship, but also begin to talk about the Constitution.
This is so mm-hmm. important, Steve. Listen, if you are interested in being part of these Kingdom Mountain meetings where you get to gather with other like-minded people that, mm-hmm. in particular, Government Mountain, really want to learn about your constitutional rights and you know, talk about, discuss, and learn. Listen, go to VFNTV.com. Get in contact with us, and we'll make sure we can connect you.
I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Don't forget you can join us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Download our app and sign up for our newsletter, The Torch,
at vfnkb.com.
I've enjoyed our time together. God bless.